Yeah, I'm Bishop Daniel from just from Sudan. I'm the auxiliary bishop of Khartoum, of the Archdiocese of Khartoum, and I serve in a region part of the Archdiocese of Khartoum, the pastoral region of Kosti. The Cardinal Archbishop is the one responsible for the region of Khartoum, while I take charge of Kosti region.
Sudan is a nation of suffering. It hits the news headlines, the media headlines, international media headlines, because of the terrible things that happen there. There is persecution of Christians in your country, no?
Yeah, there is persecution of Christians, and I would say the denial, more or less, of the existence of Christianity. In fact, I mean, they are not given chances like the Muslims, chances to develop as citizens. I mean, equal treatment as people who can be involved in economy in the country, who can be involved also in politics and the administration. I mean, there is a kind of a marginalization of Christians as if they were not citizens of the state of Sudan. And for that reason, we have been calling for equal recognition of the rights of the Christians and giving them also chances for education, chances to engage in economic activities, chances also to be acknowledged socially as people who can contribute to the building of the Sudan.
How many Christians are there in Sudan?
Well, the exact number is not very clear. Before the war in 1983, we were counting about 8 to 10 million Christians all over the Sudan.
On a population of
over the population of about 35 in that year. But now, after 22 years of war, I mean, people have been in the refugee camps across the countries. A good number of them have been in Khartoum as displaced people, whom, many of them also who were not formerly Christians became Christians in this displacement. So there is a sizable number of Christians, really. The unfortunate thing is that the census that were conducted recently had no indication as to who is a Christian and who is a Muslim in the Sudan. There was no question of religion. Religion was put aside. And it is very dangerous for us in the north because we will not claim any right for anything because our number is not known. And this would mean that the government is practically ignoring the presence and the existence of Christians, and especially in a special way in the north.
Yeah, but from what you're saying, you don't want to be recognized either for fear of persecution, no?
No, we want to be recognized as Christians. Why not? I mean, we are Sudanese, and Sudan is our country, and we want to live like as the Muslims. I mean, and I would say also that the people who are Christians in the Sudan are the indigenous of the land. The Arabs came later, and they came from the desert and found us there in that country. So, I mean, it is because of the economic and political power that has marginalized the indigenous people of the country in a way that now they don't count in the eyes of the international community. But they are the people of the land. It is our land, which has been taken away. But we are not talking of driving away these people, but we are talking of equal recognition. A Muslim who is an Arab or from Arab tribes originally, who is in the Sudan, has the right to stay in the Sudan. So do we also. We have the right to be recognized as Southerners, but not to be recognized only when we become Muslims. We would like to remain with our traditional religions. If we are people of traditional religions, we would like to remain professing our Christian religion. At the same time, be as Sudanese.
You mentioned that there are a lot of, because of the war, there are a lot of displaced people, in especially in Khartoum, no? Refugees from the south. These people were Muslims?
No, the displaced people are people who came from the south. They were not Muslims. Some did, of course, become Muslims in Khartoum because of pressure that was given to them. Because religion was also used by the government as a means to attract people who are poor, who have no way to get subsistence, way of living, to support themselves materially. So they were kind of asked to become Muslims so that they get the equal share. But this is the thing that the government of Sudan will always shy away, that they don't do that. But it is a fact. It is a fact that many of the chiefs who came from the south have been persuaded to to become Muslims so that they get offers from the government, they get money, they get anything that can make them survive. But the bulk of the displaced people have remained even after the signing of the peace agreement. Now 5 years have gone. They are still as miserable as they were before the signing of that peace agreement today. Nothing has changed.
In the south?
No, in the south, is run now by the government formed by the rebel movement that was involved in the war, is the SPLM. And in the south, it's all right. But only that, this very moment now, there is a lot of insecurity. There are insurgents coming up, and there is a lot of escalation of violence, tribal conflicts among the different tribes. Some are tribes between the militias and all that. But this, we understand that there are people behind, just to destabilize the peace that is now in southern Sudan. Certainly, there has been always people who try to advocate the fact that the southern people cannot govern themselves, and therefore the independence of the south should not be accepted. But this is the case, and this is being engineered and is being promoted by the north, because they know that if they lose the south, they lose a lot of economic wealth, resources, land, and other mineral resources that are there in the south. They don't care about the people. They care only about the land of the south. And that's why all these conflicts and all these tribal fighting now, which are happening now, are being staged so that the international community would hold on and say, no, you people from the south, you don't know what is government, you don't know what is democracy, you cannot rule yourselves.
Yeah. It's a perverse way of looking at things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why does the international media always speak about Darfur and just Darfur?
Well, the war in Darfur, there was access into Darfur maybe through Chad by the international media. And they would go there and see what the atrocities that were happening and all that. And then with a little pressure from the international community, the Sudan government also gave way so that relief is taken inside. So the issue of Darfur was magnified. This was not the case for southern Sudan. The war in southern Sudan was under complete control by the north, by the security, by the government, by the military, and all that. Certainly, there are human rights abuses in Darfur. And I would say that the case which is being raised by the people of Darfur is just as similar as to the case which has dragged the land of the south for almost 50 years, the question of self-determination, the question of facilitating the possibility that people govern themselves, people can manage their own affairs and all that. The difference between Darfur and the south is the question of religion. Otherwise, the way the Darfurians are being treated by the government in Khartoum is just not really equal, but is the same in the way they treat the people in the south.
Religion, why?
Religion, because the predominance of the people of Darfur are Muslims. So the issue which comes up there in Darfur is not really that they are being persecuted because of religion. They are being persecuted because of race. They are African race. The people in the government in Khartoum are, even though they claim to be Africans, but they are Africans of Arab origin, and they always claim to be Arabs.
This summer, there were some priests who were crucified in Sudan. National media, they spoke about that.
Was not. I think he should be a catechist. He was trying to protest the abduction of people by the LRA. This is another group which is not very known also where.
What is the LRA?
The Lord's Resistance Army, which originally came from northern Uganda, but now it has spread. It has left northern Uganda, is in eastern Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, it is in southern Sudan, and it is in some of the borders of Central African Republic. Many people believe that perhaps the Sudan government is behind this movement. This movement originally might have had problems within itself in Uganda. I mean the problems concerning northern Uganda. But in the long run, it got absorbed into the regional conflict of which the war in southern Sudan was part of. But it was not only the war that was being fought in southern Sudan. There was actually also, from the time the present government in Sudan came to power, they had a program of Islamization. Islamization, which has to go from the south of the Sahara, using Sudan as the springboard to move into the southern part of Africa. This Lord Resistance Army, to my understanding, it was not really a Christian religious movement or group, because the way the violence they have been using was not really something that could be attributed to any Christian. And until today, there has never been any Christian belief or principle which has been known internationally that could really trigger kind of harsh treatment of people, mistreatment, mutilation, and it was really violent. The Lord's Resistance Army, they started with using the question of the commandments. You see, the commandments. Now, if you say commandments in English, nothing will happen. I mean, you will not be agitated anyway. But if you say Sharia in Arabic means law. But if they say they are people of the Sharia, immediately the people of the area would have understood that these are people who have an Islamic agenda in the area, and them would have not survived somehow. But they have kind of camouflaged what they were really, in a way that people kept quiet, didn't know what to do with these commandments. But in fact, it was Islamic agenda which wanted to move from northern Uganda into the rest of Africa from there. Now the LRA is operating now in southern Sudan, the borders of Central Africa, and eastern Zaire. They are the ones, and the people whom they abduct, especially from the parishes of the Diocese of Tombra Yambio. Some of them, of course, they were badly, they were mistreated. Some, of course, they killed them and crucified them, according to the report that we got from the bishop, and the bishop got from his people, certainly, that the way how the people were being treated by these people. And so quite a good number of people died. He told us also that about three days or 4 days ago, another town, the town of Meridi, was attacked by these people. We don't know what are the the report from that town exactly. But the fact that the LRA is able to move in the area when there is the Sudan Army, the SPLA, when there is the Uganda Army, and when there is possibility that there is also the army from Zaire, one wonders really as to what is going on around there. Why should these people be left just like that to be harassing people in their homes? Some of them were refugees who were in Uganda all over these years, and now they have come back home and they would like to settle in peace without being troubled by anybody. The case now is the opposite, that even in the place where they came thinking that they were going to find peace, they are finding death. Yeah, from the hands of people who are unknown to them and for unknown purpose, why they should be killed.
Do you feel very isolated in Sudan from the rest of the world and from Rome in particular?
Yeah, from the rest of the world. From Rome, really, I wouldn't say. I mean, the church has been in support of the appeals from the Bishops' Conference of Sudan. But this issue certainly as to any kind of political makeup of the Sudan, bringing the Sudan into to build itself as a nation, the fact that many people in the international community would advocate a united Sudan. The issue of the united Sudan, nobody puts up the question of religion, because the government in Khartoum is promoting a united Sudan only under one flag, the flag of Islam and Islamic religion and Islamic culture. But none of the international, even the UN, they never question, and what about the Christians you have? What kind of concessions do you have for them? They really identify with the unity that we would like to promote in the Sudan. What do you give to the Christians? It's nothing. So in this way, we Christians in the Sudan, we feel isolated by the international community. They don't care. They don't care because if tomorrow the government of Sudan will say, oh, the people whom we are going to accept as ministers, as executives in the government, are only people who are Muslims. The international community will not say anything. And even until now, just for the simple fact that 5 years after the signing of the peace agreement, and where in the interim constitution it has been said that each and every one is free to practice his religion and is free to worship and is free to profess his faith, whether Islam or Christianity. Today, our children are still not able to be taught Christian religion in government schools. It is the church that provides that. 5 years after the signing of the peace agreement. Yeah. And where is the recognition of the Christians here? Where is the recognition of the Christians? The people who are advocating that Sudan should remain united is another way of saying, yes, Sudan should remain united. Whether Christianity eliminated or not, it's not for them. They don't care about it. And this is what I think is in the agenda of many of these big international community people.
You are listening all day now to a Synod for Africa, which has as a theme reconciliation, justice, and peace. Has it got any sense to do that for you? Because, you know, given your reality, 5 years after the peace agreement and the history, the painful history of Sudan, the massacres that are taking place there, do you feel it has some sense?
It has some sense. It is good to listen, to know what is happening in many, many, many places. Certainly, the Synod cannot really analyze each and every aspect or each and every problem that exists in the church in Africa today. But the synod can give guidelines on which, how to handle cases like the question of the fact that, yeah, we have to work for reconciliation, we have to work for justice, and of course, for that matter, it will be possible to live faithfully, I mean, in peace with others. But of course, reconciliation and justice, you need to find out what are the root causes of the absence of reconciliation, what are the root causes of the fact that we cry injustice in our country. So the search for truth, I think, is one of the major themes that this synod has taken up, that many of the conflicts and the conflict situations that are happening in Africa need to be researched properly so that we could get out also the right answers and the proper answers for each and every situation that is there. Besides the fact that, first of all, the synod is a spiritual journey, and it is an invitation back to the church to look at itself. It's a body that has to be seek reconciliation with its creator, reconciliation with it within itself, reconciliation with the world. So, I mean, it's an invitation to properly not only focus but put ourselves on the track, because if we don't appear internally and even visibly as people who are living a reconciled kind of life, it will be very difficult for us to invite other people to reconcile, either with themselves or to reconcile with God and other God. So the synod, yes, makes sense in this way.
And how do you reconcile this violence there is in your country with the existence of God? Is God in Sudan?
Oh, yes, there is God in Sudan. Oh, there is God. 23 years of civil war, we have walked with our people. They have known through the different Eucharistic celebrations that we celebrated in public squares, and they knew that we spiritual leaders, we bishops, we were powerless, and they knew that the only strength that can keep them going and continuing to witness their Christian faith was the strength in God, in their faith. I think this came out very, very, very strongly in the Christians who were there, who are now in the Sudan. And they know that their faith in God keeps them alive. And you get that from the very, very marginalized, very poor people who maybe today will not have anything to eat at home, but neither will he go or she go and sell her faith away because she slept angry. So I think there is. And I think it is from there that we begin our journey to search for justice in our country. It is from our faith, and we will not abandon it. We will not abandon it.
There is a church in Sudan.
There is a church in Sudan, yeah. It's a poor church, but it is a church that is alive. The servant of God, Pope John Paul II, told the Cardinal Zubair, who is the Archbishop of Khartoum, when he climb a high place to view the people who came to meet him in 1993. And he told Cardinal Zubair, he said, "Look, I thought these people would be afraid. and hiding. But these people, they frighten you, you see. And then he said, yes, I mean, these people, they really do frighten. I mean, they have faith. They have faith.
They yeah. frighten you in a good sense.
They frighten you in a good sense. I mean, you really feel that they are not afraid of anything. They profess their faith and openly, and without looking even behind that there is any danger at all.
Is there anything you would like to add? Because I think you have to go back to the synod.
I have to go back. Yeah. Well, I certainly this is our problem in the Sudan. It has been tried for so many years. It is almost 55 years that Southern Sudan, for instance, has been advocating for a federation to be separate from the North. Because if the North would like to pursue the Islamic agenda, we don't have a quarrel. Let them continue, but they should leave us free, should leave the South free to practice its own faith and way of life and traditions and culture and separate like that. Any person who would want to advocate unity of the Sudan, even today, will have to ask and see that all the religions of the Sudan are given equal treatment. There should not be the issue of this is a majority religion and therefore Christianity will not be acknowledged because it's a religion of a minority. I don't think this is really right. You cannot infringe on the right of a human being because he or she is only one and therefore he or she doesn't exist. I don't think that can be accepted in today's world.